Michael got he felt that they were accustomed to bowing down to the idols of Canaan, right? The Baalim and so on. Right? That's the idea. Okay, yeah. So that was the acid test as far as he was concerned, right? All right. So getting back to finish these few lines over here. So they want to ask the question. They say, "All right, tell me. He's there at the water. What is he doing, right?" Is it the Hocher Kamaya? They ask, they raise the following question. Says, the Maya de Kame, are we talking about the water which is there right in front of him? Kosoget, he bows down to it, right? And we say, the Kamai, Kamai, Osdu, and the water that was there in front of him 1 minute ago is already gone. Right, moved on. Oh, Dilmore, or maybe we should say, the Verona de Maya Kosigan. What he's doing is to actually bow down to the current of the water. Okay? The difference would be as follows. If it's only to the water in the drop, I mean, the water just in front of him and the water is gone, so it's scorched. Okay? But if it's the current itself, the current keeps on going all the time, even though the water may be different, but still. The question is, what was his intention when he bowed down? Was it to the one or to the other?
How do you find that out?
You ask him. So, that's the question. So me mitzray, so should it be prohibited? Didn't Rabbi Yochanan say in the name of Rabbi Shimon HaTzadok that mayim shel rabim ein ne'esorin, that water that belongs to the entire community, in other words, the water that's always flowing and so on and so forth, which is not private water, that's the point, it's not a private property, but it's water that's always flowing, so can never be prohibited. Okay? So he says, Lord Tzricha, we need it for an exceptional case. We need it to call Nove Me'ara, that the water flows only in its own private area. It does not flow any place out of it. So in that particular case, if he bows down to it, we know he's bowing down to, you know, purposely for that particular purpose. But if it's water in general that's flowing, then the prohibition does not apply. Okay, now we have a different case mentioned in the next Mishnah. Okay? We'll start this one already too and continue a little on the top of the next page. The new Mishnah begins, Mishoya Beso Tzomach La'Avedis Kechovin. All right. Yeah. Following situation. Okay. He has a wall. Okay. The wall of his house. Okay. And the wall is, let's say, it's right next to the wall of what? Of a bias, which is a bias of a disorder. In other words, a pagan shrine. Okay? So that the two walls adjourn. Okay? So far, so good.
It's
obviously, we have to
wall.
Say.
It's not a shared wall.
It doesn't have to be a shared wall. It could be just right next to each other, too. Right? Because to me, it makes more sense. Because with the shared wall, that'll be the next part of the Mishnah. So that's why I feel that we have to interpret this as meaning that the two walls are right next to each other. Okay? All right. Now, the following situation occurs. The Nofal, the wall fell down. All right? The wall of his house fell down, collapsed. Okay? So it says, also Livdoso, it is prohibited for the Jew to rebuild that wall. So the question is, was all the Tom, right? So that's what I say. Kesad Yaseh, so what should he do? How should he act? So they say, Koines Besoch Shelo Arba Avos. What he does is to go on his own property. He goes back from the area where the wall stood for Avos. In other words, roughly about 6 feet or something like that, 6-7 feet, okay, depending upon how you interpret what the word Amma is. You know, there are different estimates as to what an Amma is. We usually settle the compromise on a foot and a half, 18 inches, okay? So he goes back 6 feet, let's say, four almost. Ubone Shalo, right? And he builds his own wall. Vishalavedis Krechovim, and, you know, the Yavedis Zora, they'll take care of their own, okay? They'll take care of their own building of wall, okay? So it might be that they do have a wall, but as we'll see, the next part of the Mishnah.
Is this a shared wall? I don't understand.
It's a question.
Yeah.
It could either be a common wall that the two houses adjoin each other, or it could be that one wall adjoins the other so closely.
Oh.
But at any rate, it's obvious that the Jewish wall has fallen down. Okay?
Okay.
So that he cannot rebuild right next to their Beit Hazara.
Right.
Right. Yeah, that's what we translate. It's a cubit in English.
Do we have to assume, under those circumstances, that these two houses were there and the Jewish family moved in and at some other, you know, when the Jewish family first was using it, the house next door was okay? Because he wouldn't buy the house.
Yeah, if the wall is shared, then the chances are that the Jew was in there first, and the next door neighbor was not a shrine to begin with, but it became a shrine afterwards.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's quite possible.
It would have to be.
Right.
Because I would think that he would not be permitted, to buy a house.
Yeah, right.
That
you wouldn't want to be, right. So, okay. All right. Now, the next part of the Mishnah there. Oh, okay. I have to rephrase it over here. Okay. The first part of the Mishnah should be, you know, as I say, case and gas, what should you do? Koines besok shelo arba amos. Period. Over there. Okay, that makes more sense. In other words, he goes back for amos, and then he builds his own wall. Because the next one, Shalom v'shalavim is krechovim, this is really the next sentence already. What if this is a common wall belonging to both him and the pagan shrine? That's why I'm inclined to feel that the first one deals with, you know, two adjoining houses, right. And they didn't have any space in between, okay?
So it should be Arba
Hamov
with both now.
Right.
Period. Then
Shalom Vishalom Adakov. Right. All right. So now it's Shalom Vishalom Adakov. If the wall belongs to him and to the Avodah Zarah, in other words, the one top of the wall, then in that particular case, we say Nidon Metza al Metza, right? Then you have to judge that the wall is half to the Avodah Zarah and half to the Jew who owns his house, right? And, okay, so where does that leave us? That's the question. Where does that leave us? The answer is that we still have to consider the fact that if he wants to rebuild the wall, he has to build his own wall again for Amos, and he cannot actually count the neighbors, you know, the Avodah Zarah's wall, since what are you going to do? You're going to, you know, separate it in half, so he would really have to start from where the wall is and go back for Amos in order to to rebuild. Okay.
If an accident happened, or does he have to knock down the wall?
No.
It's just
an accident. An accident happened, right? Yeah. You know, like in Manhattan, the townhouse that came down this week.
Yeah.
All right. Now, Okay, so the wall came down, and what do we have? On the ground you have Avonov, Eitzov, Aforo, right? You have stones, you have wood, you have soil, right? So what about all that? So he says, Metamin Kesheretz. They convey tumor, they convey uncleanliness, just like if a person would touch a sheretz. Sheretz, remember, is a creeping creature. They crawl on the ground, and they're nevela. In other words, their carcass, if you touch it, so that is, you become tummy, okay? So sheretz has become like a proverbial expression for uncleanliness, for tumma, the famous passage in the Talmud which speaks about a person who does tshuva, but he doesn't really do it. He goes right back again to doing the same thing over and over again. In other words, he hasn't really done tshuva. And they say it's like a person who is toivel. In other words, he goes into the mikveh, b'sheretz b'yodom, holding a sheretz. So obviously he cannot be cleansed, you know, of his tumah while he was still, while he's still holding on to the sheretz. Okay, yeah. Huh? What? I can't hear you. What's that? Mukta. That's a different story. Mukta is really something that applies to the laws of either Shabbos or Yontif. It doesn't apply to other situations. I mean, I'm talking from a technical point of view. Right.
Yeah. Can't touch musical instruments.
It's yeah, right. It's mukta because since you can't play them on Shabbos.
That would be
mukta.
A
safer is not
mukta. This was definitely a
right.
Touch it with your hand.
Okay, so if you so it would convey the same amount of tumor if you touched it, you know, either the stone or something like that. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, shaketz to shaketzedo. You know, shaketz is another word for the abomination, right? So you should abominate it. Okay. But Rabbi Akiva Omer, he says, no, it's even stronger. He says, it's kenida, as a woman who is menstruating. Shenemar, tis reim kimo davor. Say to Marlo, right, that you scatter them as a woman who is menstruant, and say, go out, go. In what sense? Ma nido mitamo bimaso, just as a nido conveys tumo if you carry it. So afavenis kechovim mitamo bimaso. In other words, this is just a question of touching it, according to Rabbi Akiva, but it conveys the same tumo as if you actually had picked it up, and that's an even more severe case of tumo.
Wasn't the wall his? Wasn't the wall the Jews' wall?
It was shared.
Yeah, I know, but I mean...
The original one.
Yeah.
Yeah, but first they talk about the wall, you go back again. But in the meantime, there's rubble on the ground. So the question is, can you use the rubble for anything? Because, you know, just as, for example, you take down a building... But there are parts, you know, that you take down that could be used.
So it was
right.
Tainted because
right.
It also belonged to the...
Exactly, because it was shared with the Avedazara. Exactly the story. Right, right, yeah. Okay. So the Gemara continues and says, look, if you're moving back 6 feet, you're giving more space to what? To the Avedazara.
Right.
So Rabbi Chanina of Surah, so Rabbi Chanina who came from the town of Surah, said, the Ovablay Beis Hakisei. Well, he says, you can get around it by making it into a toilet. Okay.
Make it into what?
A toilet, a latrine, whatever you want to call it. Okay. Well, obviously, we're not talking about the kind of bathrooms that we're used to.
But the outhouse between, is that
what you're talking about? Even like an outhouse. Yeah. An outhouse already is a structure.
Can't do that.
Huh?
You can't do that.
Very often, they didn't use a structure. They did what came naturally on the ground. Okay. So, this is the point, all right? He says, what do you mean? You can't, because when you go to the bathroom, when you have to do it modestly. You need modesty over there. They don't do it openly or something like that. So it's posnished, and therefore you can't use it as a Beis HaKissing. So they say, well, all right, maybe the overlay Beis HaKissing to Lila. You use it only at night. In the day you wouldn't use it, but you use it only at night. Okay?
But you need it today. Yeah,
right. Pardon me?
You need it today.
You need a spade. Well, that's what the when they went to the camp, right?
Yeah.
Because then the Hoya Machadecho Kodosh, I mean, your Jewish camp has to be holy, right? Exactly. Okay. Yes. So, then they say, Omar Mar, but then what do the Chachomim say? Ezehu Tanua. Who is a modest person? Hanifta Balaila Bibokem Shanifta Bayom, person who has his functions at night in the same place where he does it during the day. So in the meantime, I mean, so what do we do? I mean, you can't use it just, you know, in the open. The Afal Gav Dukmino Bichaderech Misu Saboy Lemevad. Right, and even he says, if you do it, you know, the way you said to do it at night, like you do it in the day, and so on, it has to be under modest circumstances. So you can't just go dig a hole in the ground and use it like that. So they say, okay, I got a solution. Boil a mebad. The Ovadlay, the boy belongs before, boy means it's necessary, right? He has to have it's an use. So he says, the Neva the Ovadlay Litinokas, he makes a place just for children to do their duty, okay? In other words, it does not need then, because for children, you know, the idea of modesty is not so important. Or Idani, or maybe he says, the Godir lay behis behinge. He says, maybe what he did is to make a hedge around it consisting of brambles, briars, thorns, and so on. So that provided a little
privacy.
Right, a little privacy.
So the whole point of that discussion
right.
was that he shouldn't lose the value of that land and
right.
be able to put it to some use.
Right, but.
But
not to benefit
the
Aveda Zora. That's the point. Not to benefit them. Okay. Okay, we shall stop at this point tonight. Continue. Okay, today is the 19th of July, 2006, and we continue right now where we left off last time. Gemara Aveda Zora, Mem Zayin, Umet Beis. Start with the new Mishnah. Now, we're going to see in the next group of Mishnayos that I mentioned over here, there's several on this place, page, as you can see, that there is a fairly common theme that connects them. Now, what is the theme? The theme is, you know, if something is made permanently for Aveda Zora, then obviously it's Osir. What if somebody did something in order to change? Well, what is the rule over there in that particular case? And last but not least, what happens if something is put there only on a temporary basis, an idol is put in on a temporary basis?
Why would it you build a house of a Zora?
He doesn't. It's not a very good translation to say Shlosha Botim the Mishnah. Shlosha Botim Hain, right, that there are three houses. Well, what kind of houses are we talking about? The answer is, we're talking about three different types of buildings that are used as shrines for Aveda Zara. You understand? We're not talking about you build a house. But we're talking about if it is used as a shrine for Aveda Zara. So, is there one blanket rule for them? Or, as I said a few moments ago, do you have different rules that apply to this particular building? So this is what the Mishnah is saying. All right, Shlosha Botim Hain, right, you have three different types of shrines, okay? Bayis Shebedoye Mitchila La'avedas Kechavim, right? If it was built to begin with as a shrine for Avedas Zara, right, then Hareza also, no question, it is prohibited, okay? Siyado v'chiyado, yeah, yes.
What do you mean, what is prohibited? Who is, what's being prohibited?
Prohibited to the Jew.
Prohibited to the
Jew. To the Jew. I'll go over it because it's not as simple as it seems from the text over here. Okay, so we'll go over the Rashi, where he explains it a little bit. I'm not 100% sure, I mean, but we have to understand Rashi's interpretation, okay? Okay, so so I started in with the Mishnah itself. Okay, all right. So that's part one of the Mishnah. Okay, siyado v'chiyado la'avedas kechavim v'chidesh no til ma shechidesh. Okay, he is plastered. All right, so he plastered it. Or he decorated it in some other way. That's a good question. We're talking about a Jew or a goy. Okay. So you have to take a look at the Rashi to try to get a clearer picture. Yeah. Okay. For Aveda Zara, and then he made a change. In this case, obviously, who's making the change? The Jew is making the change. Okay. So Noitel Mashachidesh. Then he removes what he added. Okay, there's more explanation, obviously.
Yeah, they're using pronouns,
right,
to
right. Well, you can do it, you know. It's not the pronoun, the question is the noun that's involved. Who is it? Right. Who is it? Right. Yeah. What if he brought into the house a getchka? An Aveda Zara, an idol, right? And then he removed it. So Hareza Mutar, then the house is okay. It's permissible to make use of the house. All right.
He took the idol out.
That's what the change was, that he only put it there temporarily.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, chvais nishmat, this is what he did, right? He put it in there temporarily. Okay? Yeah. So, Rashi. Okay. He says, Shlosha botim hein le'inyan bitul avedes kechavim. In other words, Rashi already is saying that we're talking about a house used as a shrine, and how do you get rid of the avedes zara? How do you get rid of it? Bittul. We had already had the word bittul before. We had, for example, if somebody has a statue, right? So if the goy, for example, you know, chops off the nose or something or other, right? Or he lets the whole thing fall into disrepair, then in that particular case, we say that it's, from this point on, is permitted to the Jew. Why is it permitted to the Jew? Because the guy himself has renounced it. That's what the Beatle is, right? He has renounced his Aveda Zara. He doesn't believe in it anymore. Okay. So that's okay. But we also learned, incidentally, that as a general rule, it's not the Jew who can perform Beatle of Aveda Zara, but who? It's a guy. A Jew has to induce a goy to be mevatel avodah zarah.
Oh, what you're saying is you
right.
cannot go in and destroy.
Right.
Destroy it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, something that we learned quite a few weeks ago. Yeah. Right. Yeah. All right. So, the first type, as we said, is a house that was built with the original intention that it should be a shrine for Venezuela. Right. Shetachilas binyone, when it was first built, says Rashi. It was so for idolatry. The Hoya Oivdin is Habaya Satsmo. And not only that, but Rashi adds something else that's very interesting. He says, well, not even talking, he says, about the idol in the house. But we're talking about the house itself became an object of idolatry. In other words, when the goy would go by the house, he would bow down to it and so on, and you know, and proclaim that this is one of his deities, okay?
Not just a holy place, but actually a
right.
deity?
Yes. Right, well, that's the idea, I mean. The shrine is something that he worships, that's what I say. What do you worship? You worship a building? It's the idea behind it. I mean, okay, the goy. I mean, go figure out a goyish cup, especially an idolater. I'm not talking about the modern educated goy. We're talking about that. Okay. Although even you know, I don't have to tell you, education doesn't always mean that you have a tolerant mind, an open mind, or anything like that. You know that.
Just look at them.
Right, right, exactly. I mean, these are people, you know, leading all the, those Arab nationalist movements. They're university grads. Didn't help.
Yeah.
All right, continue with Rashi.
Where
so,
are you, Rashi?
Oh. Where it says right over there. You see?
Yeah, okay, but.
Right. Now the next thing he says, or is it also, right? Because according to Rashi, the whole Habayis Haviyavidis Kechavim, the house itself has become an idol, right? The Yimoyvet Kechavim Bidoy, and so if the guy goes and he builds such a house, right? Also, it's prohibited for a Jew to have anything to do with it, but Achivat Lenu, right? Until he, the goy is going to, as I said, nullify the house. In other words, he does something another, right? That he shows that it's no longer an idol, as far as he's concerned. This is what Rashi says. In other words, he should break off something from the house, right? Now, the im shall Yisrael who? But if the house belongs to a Jew, also a lomis, then he is prohibited forever. Avonov Esov Afor. Remember, we said that certain things may be prohibited by themselves, but that, you know, let's say they break down or something like that, so can you use the debris for whatever it may be, stones, rocks, wood, and so on and so forth. But in such a case, you can't.
Well,
yeah.
Mr. Cohen had this house, and it was leased to this family.
Right.
And they got religion, and
right.
they turned it into a shrine
yeah.
and an object of devotion.
Yeah. Well, as far as leasing, oh boy, this goes back months and months ago that we had in the first chapter about can a Jew lease property to a goy? And we learned, if you remember, that it depended upon what we're talking about. If we're talking about Eretz Yisrael, then it should not be. If you know that the goy is going to have a Venezuela, okay. If it's in outside of Eretz Yisrael, then they're more lenient about it, okay. But still, I mean, you try to minimize the amount of Hanoi, you know, the amount of benefits that you're going to get.
We just learned
that
if this happens,
right,
by whatever means,
yeah,
the Jew would, as it were, no longer own that house.
Right.
Would
absolutely have right. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, Rashi continues with an explanation on the rest of the Mishnah. It says, "See you know, the key you know, love it is kachavim." Right.
Right.
So, which, as we said, he plastered or he did something else to decorate this. So it says, Shahoya bias for doing the Dira Sodom. Now he says, here we are talking about a house that was built as a human habitation, right? A house for people to live in. And then he came along, Vihiktsohu Lavid is Kikhovin, right? And he then set it aside. That's what mukta means. It's so is the verb. It means he set it aside. Okay? He set it aside for Avodah Zarah. So it wasn't built that way to begin with. Okay? But
the Jew set it aside?
No.
The guy. Yeah. Okay?
It was built just as a house.
Right. And then what else did he do? He says, the tochu, the seed, right, he plastered it. The Yosabotzi, you're in love with the tochu, the kiyado, it says, means that he made all kinds of figures, images, pictures for Avodah Zarah, you know, okay? So in that particular case, Noitil Bashechidesh, what does it mean? He removes what he had added. It says, boy, you throw ale, the vatlo. If a Jew comes along and he wants to make this house portal, in other words, so he can make use of it, right? So what can he do? So he says, Notel Masha Chidesh, he can remove whatever pictures and plaster and so on has been added to the house since it was originally built. Umutar Habayis, then the house is permitted to the Jew. The Afal Pi Shalom Itlo Oved Kechovim. This is already even stronger than what we learned from what I mentioned a few minutes ago. Even if it was not the Goy who nullified the house, but it was, in other words, the Jew has the right under those circumstances, removes everything, so that way he can nullify the Avodah Zarah that existed at one time in the house, right? Oh, I feel a hoyasor shall Yisrael mumar. Even if it is, let's say, the Avodah Zarah of a Jew who converted to idolatry. And his Avodah Zarah can never be bottle can never be nullified, but Hacha bottle in this particular case it can be. Why? What is prohibited in this particular case that they give us? Elo Chidush, right? The new thing that he did, namely the plastering, that he added to the house that wasn't there to begin with, okay? The Ahu Chidush, this new addition that has been made to the house, Shebitel, right? So, which he nullified, he says, also Bahadur the Oilam, this is prohibited, okay? So, is it prohibited? Obviously, a moment ago we said if it's a goy, belong to, the Jew can be, he can nullify it, he can be vatal, right? But if it was a Jew who had become an idolater, oh, that's already another story. Then whatever he added can never be nullified. This is what Rashi is saying. There's more to Rashi, as you can see, than what the actual text itself is.
Really very good answer.
Right.
It requires that explanation.
Right.
good example of how Rashi explains things,
right.
Clarifies everything.
Yeah,
it occurs to me that this kind of situation could very well have been something that he thinks that could have happened and could happen.
Yeah, it's a
it's a, it's
right,
more,
right.
It's a more reasonable thing that, that was not just out of the imagination.
Right, right.
Okay.
All right, let's continue with the Rashi and finish it. Huh? Well, we have to pay our respects to Rashi.
Okay.
Okay. And then he continues and he says, so the Gemara, Mukil Law, and the Gemara, they're going to bring an example, Shaloi Ne'evad Habayis Be'olam, that this house never was actually worshipped itself as a shrine. Remember, in the first case, we said that Rashi says that the house itself is worshipped. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
Here he says, no, it was never worshipped, but it's only, you know, that they put in pictures or whatever it may be, you know, of it is over. Okay? That the, but that they put it where? They put it on the wall, you see. That's the point. I mean, so that it became part of the house. But how do you get rid of it? So you have to take it away. You have to scrape it off and get rid of it. Aval, imishtach haver lo oivet kekovim, ach reichen, ne'esar kol habayis. This brings out again, this says, that if the goy actually worshipped this house, then the entire house is prohibited. Uvoy oivet kekovim levatlo. Then, in that particular case, the goy himself has to renounce the avodah zarah, right? But what if it's a Jew who bowed down to this? He says, Asura Erlomis. It is prohibited forever. Right. Then the third thing that we had over there is Hichnis the Seichayavidischechav. What if he brought in idolatry into this house? In other words, it didn't have it itself. And as Rashi says, yes, Abayah Sasper Lloyd is coming Lave, and he had no intention whatever of worshipping the house. So not only that, but he never set aside this house that it should be used really as a shrine for Aved Zora, right? Elo Lafishoa Hichnis let him see border Agechka for a temporary whatever, get it out of the rain or something, who knows why. Okay, so the Gemara.
Gemara.
Right. Omarav.
Attacked on the text.
Right, right.
That's great.
Well, you know, the Gemara explains, or at least has something, you know, tries to explain the Mishnah, whatever it may be, okay? Or raises questions about it, maybe, you know. The morals of the discussion always based on the text of the Mishnah itself. Okay? Omar Rav. Rav said, Habishtach Haver L'Abayis Asorah. Right. If he bows down to this house, then he made it prohibited. Right? He, so, the Gemara to this Mishnah that we just finished. Hamishtach Haver L'Abayis.
That's the Mishnah. Okay. Oh, okay.
First we had the Mishnah, then we had the Gemara. Right.
Sorry, my mistake.
Right, right. Because there's another Mishnah coming up on the same
right,
day.
I was,
right.
I was,
right. All right. So Rob says, right, Hamishtach Haver L'Abayis Asura, right? If he bows down to the house, then it's prohibited. Even as Rashi pointed out, that, you know, if you make the house itself, you know, Aveda Zora, then there's no question that it's prohibited. So Almo, so from this we see Kosovar, that Tolosh, but it was safe, Hebrew, Kitolosh, and Domi. So from this we see that he was of the opinion that if something first was separated, talking about separated from the ground, from the earth, and afterwards he joined it to the earth, right? So Ketolish Dome, it still remains, you know, as if it were separated from the earth. The reason why I'm mentioning from the earth, we had also before a question, you know, about objects, you know, trees or something, or water, if you remember, that if it is, you know, part of the ground, then that is never subject to the law of Itazar. It belongs to everybody, and so everybody can use it. It's not subject to it.
That so, separates the ground.
Right.
Movable.
Right.
It's not therefore, would permanently have to remain in the structure.
Right. It would have to be permanently attached. So, but rather, apparently, you're saying then that if, you know, to begin with, it was never part of the ground. But, you know, they simply brought in wood, cement, and stuff like that, and they made it, right? So, even though now it is part of the ground, I mean, the building stands on the ground, right? But nevertheless, we could consider it as if it were not permanently part of the ground. That's what the rabbi
is
saying.
What is the consequence of that?
Rashi says, Tolish will say Hebrew, he says, Abde bias Tulushin, right? He had a house, you know, stones that were going to be used in order to build a stone, a house of stone, right? And moving on. And then he put them together, he built them, the Hebrew and the Karka, and he joined it to the ground, okay? So what he's trying to say over here is simply that, all right, yeah.
I guess my question would be: if it's considered,
then in that particular case, it would seem that Rav says that as long as you didn't worship the house itself,
right?
Okay, then it would be okay. But it's not exactly what the text says, because we see that there's another opinion now that they call for Anan, but didn't we say that Benoi, right? He built it. So he says, Tanan Banoi. So he said, yeah, it was built. Afal Pishal Ishtachav Eloi, Ishtachav. Okay, Afal Pishal Bidoi. So we're dealing with a case that he did not bow down to it at the time when he built it, but what happened? Then afterwards, he bowed down to it. So, in that particular case, the house should be what? It's prohibited, right? So, yeah. So, if that's the case, Ani Shlesha, talking about the three in the Mishnah, the three different types of houses, he says, Arba, and this is another type of a house. So he says, Kevin on the Inyan Beetle. So, inasmuch as we're really talking about how to nullify the Avodah Zarah in these various situations, so, Bona Vishtachav, whether he built it or whether he bowed down, Chad Kochoshevte. It's as if it was all the same thing. So that, therefore, if he bows down to it, what did we say? It's prohibited, right? If he doesn't bow down to it, then we can find ways in order to be Mevatel. Even the Jew could be Mevatel, we said, in that particular case. So since we're mentioning about three, there's another three coming up. New Mishnah. Another
third
Mishnah.
House is where the Jew becomes an Avodah Zarah. That's the third house? Because actually if you read
the third house is not that. The third house was where he simply put an idol inside the house. That's it. That's all.
Okay.
He put the idol in the house temporarily.
He didn't worship it or anything, just put it there for whatever reason he put it in. Okay. Shalosh Avodim Hei. There is the next Mishnah. Yeah. These are very short, right? Shalosh Avodim Hei. It says there are three different types of stones. What's his three different types of stones? So we'll see in a second. Evan Shachatzova Mitzchilo Lebibus. Okay. Yeah. First example of a stone is a stone that when the man quarried it, you know, course, we're not talking about Little Rock or something like that. We're talking about, you know, like, I mean, you've been there as well. You've seen what stone houses look like. I mean, it's very common over there. So he went and he dug up stone specifically for the purpose of using it for what? For Avodah Zarah. So that's case number one. Okay?
Okay.
That's what he means. What does Bibus mean over here? Here it's translated as like a, it should be as a base or a pedestal for an idol. That was his purpose in cutting out the stone.
Is that related to Bima? Like the word Bima?
No. It's a good question as to what Bimus means over here. Obviously, it's either from Greek or Latin origin, okay? But we've had the word basis, which is a good Greek word, basis, like in English, right? And that is used very commonly for the word for a pedestal. So here, Bimus is an unusual word, but the sense of it would be as a pedestal for an idol, okay?
Who is doing the stone, you know?
Could be a goy. Could be a goy.
Yeah. And then they go on to say again.
Right.
If one plasters a stone, I mean, who is one? Who is one? Who are they talking about?
Okay. It could either be a Jew or a goy, whatever. We'll see in a second. Okay. Okay.
He wants to keep the suspense.
All right.
He doesn't want you to know.
So this is the first time.
Too easy.
That it was quarried with the original intention that this should serve as a pedestal for Azayda Beda Zora. So obviously, Harezu Asura, right? It's prohibited.
Get it.
Right. See Yador, the Chiyador, the Shema Beda Sechomim. Now, here, a stone was quarried on it, we decorated it in some way or other, right? For idolatry, right. So, what happens? Neutel Masha Siyed, right? The Chiyed. So, if you remove, you know, what was plastered and what was decorated, Umuteras, well, that's permitted. Then you can use the stone again. Now, what happened to the Midolehavis Kechavim? You have a stone, you put an idol on top of it. Besuka, then you removed it. Harezu Muteres. In other words, the idol was not meant to be placed permanently upon the stone, but just temporarily, you rested it over there.
It was primarily for that purpose.
Correct. Only in the first part of the Mishnah, there was hewn for this purpose. But not the other cases, okay? It's parallel, you know, as you can see, to the previous Mishnah that we had.
Right.
Where they're talking about the shrine. There's somewhat similar over there. Gemara. Amar Rav Ami, Rav Ami said, Hu shesiyed v'chiyed begufo shel evet, he says. You know, we're talking about the decorations, right? It's where, you know, he actually dug into it in order to put in his decorations and so on and so forth. I mean, that's more than just the surface. Surface, well, you know, that could be easily removed, right?
Right.
Right. That's ridiculous statutory. Muslims also.
They make a niche.
The Christians,
in the wall.
Right. And the Muslims also put niches and they put little statues and then it becomes a. Okay, we wasted good time here.
It's all right.
All the cries of power. A lot of it irrelevant, but I think.
This first part of the Gemara says, "Vehu shasiyed v'chiyed begufo shel evel." Right? What does it mean? Begufo shel evel. This says, "As what Rav Ami is saying." He says, "Shechokak bo." In other words, he actually dug into it. Yeah. Right. Tsura, right. You know, a figure of some sort. But barzo, okay. And, you know, by using, you know, a tool in order to
right.
put it permanently in. Okay. Avol tziyed v'chiyed olecho, says Rashi, on your day tiyach. But if all he did is to put plaster on it, then materas would be permitted, right? Below beetle, you don't even have to. All you have to do is what? Remove it. As long as the stone was not worshipped as what? As Avodah Zarah. That's what he's saying.
It's sort of commonsensical,
I guess. Yeah. Or do we have the bias to none, right?
We're back to the Gemara.
Yeah, the Gemara, right. And this is similar to what we learned just a few moments ago about the shrine, the house, right? Bias, he says, Lav begufehu umitzar, right? But he says, nevertheless, the house, even though he doesn't actually dig into the house itself, but nevertheless, right, it is prohibited, right?
Why?
So, why? It's prohibited as long as the thingies are all there. Right. So, by a stomach, you could, Bini Ure, he says, you know, a house, the spaces between the bricks on which you can put in plaster and so on and so forth. So, he says, Milo Yaskidin the Shia, the other Shia, we talking about, you know, where, in this case, Shia, he plastered it, he did this and that, right, he decorated it, and again, and after that, what, Hodder Beetle, and then after, my eyes skipped it, okay. That's good, the Shia, the Hodder Shia says, Elo Ki Yitmar, but when we study this opinion, the Rabbi Ami, he says, the Inyan Beetle, we're talking about, can he mevatel? In other words, can he nullify this particular stone, just as can he nullify things that were done to the house in order, you know, that would be permitted? The afag of the siyeh v'chiyeh b'gufo shel evin, right? But even though he even dug in, and this is a little stronger, that even though he dug it in,
right,
he plastered it, dug it in into the stone itself, Kinotal Mashachide Shapitoi, if you can remove that, take it away, it's all right. Okay.
Simple
rule,
right?
Right.
Simple
rule. Yeah. The Mahu the table, because what if you argue that Kavan Shasir the Khiyat Begufo Shalevan Kevin Shachatov Bitrima Vishavim W? Why can't we argue, he says, that the minute that he actually dug into the actual structure of the building, the stone itself, right? That he did the plastering, so in other words, so we might think that that's the particular case. It's exactly the same as if the stone had already been quarried to begin with for Avedazon, right? Matitzon should be Matitzon Kula. It should be completely prohibited. So he says, Kobashvadon. We learn that you could still be mevatel that by removing it, even, you know, by digging in into
you can still use it.
Right.
To remove the
remove whatever you added.
The plaster there. And all the indentations.
Right. Okay, I think we'll stop at this point tonight.
Very nice. Very good.
Okay, right. Let's see. Tonight is the 26th, I believe,
correct,
of July 2006. We continue now with the Gemara of Avodah Zarah on Daf Mem Ches Amud Aleph, in other words, 48a. Start with the Mishnah. The next group of Mishnayos that we're going to have in this chapter, actually, as we'll see, deals with the problem of the Asherah, the tree that has been planted for Avodah Zarah, or that is worshipped as Avodah Zarah, or whatever the ramifications are. The very first Mishnah actually seems to fall in line with exactly what we've had last week, in that, again, they're talking about three. The first one, prohibited. The second one, you add or do something to it, and then what becomes prohibited in that respect, right? Last week, for example, with the house, It was the plastering, the decorating that you did, and so on and so forth. And then the third thing is, if you simply put an idol over there, removed it, so it is garnished. Right, right. So we'll see a parallel over here in this first mission that we have. But as I say, it's the beginning of a series of Mishnahs that deal with an Asherah. So the Mishnah begins by saying, Shalosh Asherah's Hain. There are three different types of Asherah. First one is Ilan, Sheneto Mitzchilo L'Shem HaMedes Kechavim, Arezu Asura. Okay? A tree which has been planted to begin with for that it should be worshipped as an idol, right? And it's prohibited. Rashi adds, Achivat Lenohavit Kechavim. If the goy who planted it, in other words, now we're talking about the goy planted a tree for Avedizar. So if he planted it for that, and then he decides, nothing. Obviously, it doesn't mention what he has to do in order to presumably if he takes a hatchet and he chips away at the bark or something like that, you know, and spoils it in some way, it shows, you know, that he no longer has any use for this particular tree as an idol. He gives up on that, and so then it would be permissible. So, but if he doesn't do that, then it is prohibited. Gida'o ufislo, l'shem haveris kechovim. Ehechalif. Okay. This is the next category. Gida'o means that he cut, probably lopped would be a better translation. Ufislo means also like that he pruned or something like that, right? For Aveda Zora, and it grew subsequently. You know, in other words, it improved the growth. So, no-till Mashiach Chalif, right? In that particular case, if he removes what has grown after, then in that particular case, that is prohibited, obviously. After he did the pruning and the lopping, okay? Did the pruning and the lopping on this tree, okay? So, obviously, we have to talk about what? If we compare it to the house that we had in the previous Mishnah, we have to say that just as the house in the previous Mishnah, number two, is where it was not originally built as a shrine for Aveda Zora, but subsequently he decided to put in symbols of Aveda Zora, decorated with such symbols, right? So if he removed it, then the house again becomes valid to live in, okay? So this tree too, we would have to say the same business, namely that if originally the tree was not planted for Aveda Zora, but what happened? They decided to make it into an Aveda Zora, and in order to do so he lopped it, he pruned it, and so on and so forth, and it improved, obviously, the growth of the tree. So whatever this improvement is that it engendered, if you remove that, and as we'll see, you burn it, this is the general idea, then in that particular case, so then the rest of the tree remains permitted, okay? And finally, the last category that the Mishnah mentions, parallel, as I say, to the other one. In this case, it's Hemitachteha Avidis Kechavim. He took an idol and he placed it underneath this tree. Okay? And then he removed it. So the minute that he removed the idol from there, then what? Hareze Muteris, then it is permissible. Okay? So now, the Gemara continues. Question is on number two. What kind of an improvement did he make? We said, you know, he pruned it, he lopped it, and so on and so forth. So Ami Devei Rabbi Yadai, so the school of Rabbi Yadai, discussing this, they said, V'hu she'hivrich v'hikiv v'gufo shel Ilon. Okay. He says, if the farmer did as follows. Hivrich means that he bent it over. The word berach in Hebrew is a knee. So just as the knee bends, you know, so Hivrik means that he bent it over. Right, right. And the Hirkiv, and then he grafted it, the Gufa Shel Ilon, into the actual tree itself, right? So, and, right, he did that, right. So in that particular case, the question is, so what? Okay, so says, let's take a look at the Rashi, where it says Gemara over there, you see? Okay, it says, Behu Shehivrich, it says Begufo, right? In other words, into the body of the tree itself, he bent it over, Neyosa Havrochu HaKova, right? And then, from that grafting on, you know, bending it over. What they did is to bend it over and put it into the ground in order that new shoots should come from it. Or grafting it into the actual body of the tree itself, right? Or you, Khalifa Sov, and, you know, there were improvements that then, you know, happened. So the Havelei Harach Gidulin Hanetuyim Mitchilo Dachach. Then it's as if those things that were that grew afterwards, as if right from the beginning they belonged to it. The love hochi afidu chidush leimitzah, because if it wasn't for the fact that they actually did this, then we would say, you know, just to go to do this is goodish. But obviously, what he had, he wanted to improve it with the intention of avodah zarah. That it should be even more beautiful, it should, you know, produce fruit, in other words, that would be more acceptable and things like that. So, Va'anan, Yido, Fislo, Tanan, didn't the Mishnah say that lopping and pruning, right? Elo, Ki Itmar, the Rabbayani, Riyama is Le'inyun Bito. But rather what we're talking about in the case of this statement of Rabbi Yami that we just have over here is as far as Bittel. In other words, if he wants, right, to Mevatel, in other words, to nullify it as an object of Avodah Zarah. Okay. So, obviously, Rashi repeats, he says, Itmar says, V'lo l'inyan t'chilas isur, they're not talking about the fact that to begin with it is prohibited. Lomar, to tell us now that she'im lo hivrich begufig, first of all, if he had never actually grafted it onto the tree itself, then lo yehit tzorach bitul, then it doesn't have to be vatal, I mean, because it had nothing to do, you know, with the original tree. Ela bitul kai, so we have to say we're talking now about nullifying, you know, if he did this. The Chimavatala Yisrael, right, it says, even a Jew in this particular case, it's sagi, it's enough also for him to be Mevatala. You don't need the goy. In the case of the house, remember, you know, or in general, an idol, the goy has to be Mevatala, you know, he has to nullify it. A Jew does not have the authority to nullify it. But in this particular case, I mean, if he didn't really, do the grafting onto the tree and so, then it's not necessary, he says. I mean, and even a Jew, then in that case, could be bevatled that. Okay. So, the question is over here, you know, so what are we gaining out of this? So he says, the afal gav, the hifrich, what we're saying is that even though he bent the branch over, the hirkiv, the gufish alilon, and he grafted it onto the body of the tree, ki notal, then once he takes it away, masha hechliv shapir domi, then whatever then grows after this, it's also all right, he says. The Mahu the Tema, because what if you argue as follows? Kevon de Hivrich de Hirke Bekufa Shel Ilon, we might argue as follows, that look, once he once he bent it over and grafted it onto the tree itself, it's Kilo Shelato Mitchilon Domi, then it would be as if he had as if it now is part of the tree itself that was originally dedicated to Avodah Zarah, the litzor kula, it should be completely prohibited, not even, you know, whatever it may be. So kavash malon, that it's possible, you know, that you can make use of it, you know, once you just remove that part alone, you know, which was improved as a result. Amar Shmuel. So Shmuel has the following to say. He says, "Hamishtachave le'ilon," right? If somebody bows down to the tree, then tosfe asura, right? Then whatever is added to it subsequently is prohibited. Okay. The first case, we didn't say actually that he bowed down to it. We say that it was planted in honor of it. Okay. Here, he's saying you take a tree, which probably was not set aside for Avodah Zarah to begin with. Okay? But you make it into Avodah Zarah by bowing down to it, right? Then again, whatever, you know, is added, in other words, whatever results from this tree is prohibited. So Masav Rabbi Elazar. So Rabbi Elazar asks a question about that. He says, look, Gido Fistul Avedis Kochovim, if he lopped it and he pruned it for the Avedis Zorah, right? That it should be, you know, a nice Avedis Zorah, the Echlif, and then it grew, you know, it improved and grew nicely, whatever happens. So not a Masha Hechlif, that in that particular case, what the improvement is, he takes it, right? But Gido Efislo in, so if he did that, yeah, okay. But Lo Gido Efislo, but if he never did any cutting or pruning, you know, once he bowed down to it, then in that particular case, Lo, then the whole thing is no. No good. So Amalacho Shmuel. So Shmuel said, "Oh, Mani." So tell me, who is the author of this statement? Because don't forget, again, we're talking about a time when things were remembered orally, and people sometimes they were called Amoroyim. Even though we use the word Amoroyim for the teachers of the Talmud in comparison to the Tanoim, who were the teachers of the Mishnah, you understand? But another meaning of the word Amora sometimes is that he would be somebody who would remember oral statements that he had learned from his teacher. And then when there was a discussion in the Beis Medrash about this particular subject, so people would contribute what they had heard from their teachers and so on in order to try to elucidate this. But this was all oral. It was a big revolution when they finally decided to write down their various laws, because originally the statement was that we find in Gemara that says that Torah shebiksav, in other words, the written Torah, ator kesev, you have to write them. But Torah shebaal peh, the Torah which is oral Torah, that has to remain baal peh, orally. So it took a long time until they finally decided that the material had grown so voluminous, there were so many different opinions on so many different subjects, that it was time to organize. This is what led to the Mishnah. Now, it didn't happen overnight, the Mishnah. First of all, some people had their own little private collections of Mishnayos that they had jotted down for themselves. Mishnas Rabbi Eliezer, for example, there's a Mishnas Rabbi Akiva and things like that, okay? But then, when they discuss it in the yeshiva, under the leadership of Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, this is about the year 200 approximately, so they discuss the various inyonim, and of course, I don't have to tell you, if you take a look at the Mishnah, you'll see that it deals with a tremendous number of subjects. Tremendous number. As we have the occasion to see over here. Here is one of the Vedizara. And look how many chapters we have had and how many different Mishnahs in each chapter that we've had. Now picture for every single, as we call them, a Masechta, or Masechta, right? Tractate. Dealing with everything, whether it's agricultural law, dealing with Shabbos and Yom Tov, dealing with the matters of marriage, divorce, and things of that nature, and dealing with torts, in other words, suits that people bring against each other because of damages that have been done, and or criminal law and stuff like that, and so on. And to say nothing of a kochim which deals with sacrifices and the various things that were brought into Beis HaMikdash, and then you have the last seder of Mishnayos, which deals with Tara, cleanliness, to know all these things, it required tremendous effort. And they had tremendous organizational ability in order to put all these things together in such a way that you could refer to it and come back and discuss all this subject matter. Yes,
this was all coming down from oral.
Yes, yes. This is all oral to begin with until they finally decided that it couldn't remain oral anymore. Okay, but then. You have the discussions based on it, what we call Gemara over here. Discussions based on the Mishnah. What does the Mishnah mean? Particularly because it isn't just the text of the Mishnah, but they had other statements that they remembered that were never included in the official text of the Mishnah, that what we call Baraisa. Literally, those that are outside of the regular canon. Or Tosefta, additional Mishnahs, so which were not part of the body of the Mishnah itself, but which deal with the same subject matter. It's an addition. So these are texts that they used in the Gemara discussion in order to try to elucidate the text in the Mishnah more so we could understand better and see what is it applied to.
Right. Has a special Hebrew language.
Yes, absolutely. Mishnah was written in Hebrew, and believe me, there are thousands of new words that came into the language as a result of the Mishnah. Right. There's even borrowings, particularly from Greek, and to a certain extent, some words that come from Latin and so on. But Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi was a very, very educated person, not only in the world of Torah, but also he spoke Greek, he spoke Latin, because he had to deal, being the Nasi of Eretz Yisrael, with the Roman authorities. And in those days, the big shots among Rome liked to use Greek, just as at a time, much later period, where you had people who spoke French in order to show how aristocratic they were, and so on, right, yeah. All right, so getting back over here, okay. So, yes. Huh? Yes, we're in Memches, Amud Aleph, and the question now that Shmuel asks is, Shmuel says, Homani, who is the author of this last statement that we had? Rabbanani, right? Is it rabbis? Right? Ushmuel the other like a Rabbi Yosef or Yehuda. But Shmuel's statement is not like that of the rabbis in the Mishnah over here, but rather like the opinion of Rabbi Yossi bar Yehuda. The Omar said, Ilan Shenetol, right, a tree that was planted originally not for Aveda Zora, right? Belief so Fabode, right? But afterwards the time came that somebody worshipped it as an Aveda Zora, so also it's prohibited. And he doesn't say it's prohibited under what circumstances, okay? So we have to assume then that in one case the rabbis were perhaps more lenient in their opinion by saying that what? By saying that the tree, you know, if he worshipped it, something like that, but if he removed the improvements that he made to the tree, then it would be all right. Right.
Any future growth,
right.
It's no good.
No. The improvement would not. But what was there originally would be okay.
What the tree has to continue to grow is what he's saying.
Pardon me?
The
you mean after you removed that?
Yeah.
Yeah, after you removed it, then there would be a different story. Right, right. It's just that which grew immediately, the improvement immediately, and you destroy that, then after that, yeah, I mean, that would be understandable. Right. Whereas Rabbi Yossi bar Yehuda would seem to, his opinion would seem to be, you know, that once it's been worshipped, it's also okay. Master Flor Rav Ashi. So Rav Ashi disagrees with this opinion. Literally, he attacks it. Maskit. Nimai, he says, why do you say the Rabbi Yossi bar Yehuda, the Rabbonon, that both Rabbi Yossi bar Yehuda and the rabbis, but Tosefus Pligi, that they're arguing about the Tosefus, in other words, the improvement that came in afterwards. Dilma Tosefus and the Riyakol Osir. Perhaps both of them are in agreement that whatever grows is prohibited. So what are they arguing about? Vikore Pligi. Maybe they're arguing instead about the tree as it existed before it was worshipped, right? The Rabbi Yossi bar Yehuda Sovar Ikore Nami Osur. In other words, the Rabbi Yossi bar Yehuda is of the opinion that once it's worshipped, then even the original part of the tree is prohibited, right? Dirsiv, and he bases it upon a pasuk which says, "Va'asherehem tisrafun ba'esh," which means that there are asheras, right? You should burn in fire. So, in other words, he would apply it to what? To the entire tree, destroy it. So, nonsense of aveda zara. The rabbanon savrei, but the rabbis are of the opinion that Ikar Ilan Shori, that the main part of the tree, the original part of the tree, is permissible. Dixiv, as it is written, Vasharehem, and their Ashera Tegadeun, or Tegadeun, right? You should cut them down. So, in other words, how does he what would be the implication of the second part of the Pasuk? It's written, you know, Ashrehem Tishfum Ba'esh, Fasilei Elohehem Tegadeon. Okay? So he says that part means that if you cut off that which grew afterwards, so that and you burn that, that's enough. Ezehu Ilan Shegidui also Vikori Shore. What kind of a tree are we talking about? Where? What? You lopped and so on afterwards is prohibited, but the main part of the tree, the original part, is permissible. Hedeyomer, we have to say, Ilan Shenito, we're talking about a tree where, to begin with, he planted it not for Aveda Zora, but only for Levir Sof Avodei. Finally, there came a time when he worshipped it. The Chi Temor. Now, if you should argue, or the Lord, but the Tatsin and Hochi, that we should not that we should not interpret it this way, right? Then we should say Ipoch Rabbanan, the Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, the Rabbi Yehuda, Bar Yehuda, the Rabbanan. In other words, we should say that the opinion quoted in the name of the rabbis is really Rabbi Yossi Bar Yehuda's opinion, and Rabbi Yossi Bar Yehuda's opinion quoted over here is with the rabbis. So Im Kain, if that's the case, Gido'o Fislo Mankotani, then why, who's the author of the statement in the Mishnah itself, that, you know, the second clause over there, which says that if he cut it and he pruned it, right, who said it? Lo Rabbanu lo Rabbi Yossi bar Yehuda. If you would turn them around, you would say that it's neither the rabbis nor it's Rabbi Yossi bar Yehuda. Because e Rabbanu, if it's the rabbis, below Gideo Fislo, name Tosefes Asura. Because if it's in accordance with the rabbis, as you now interpret it, then even as, you know, you cut it, even if you did not cut it, below Gideo, right? Even if you did not cut it or prune it, then what still grows would still be prohibited. Or e Rabbi Yossi bar Yehuda, and if it would be the opinion of Rabbi Yossi bar Yehuda, then Ikar Ila Nami Yosu, then we would say that the original tree is also prohibited. So Eboy Seymour, so they're arguing back and forth, who said what, right? So Eboy Seymour, if you wish, you can say Rabbanans, rabbis. The Eboy Seymour, Rabbi Yossi bar Yehuda. And if you want, you can say it's Rabbi Yossi bar Yehuda. So Eboy Seymour, Rabbi Yossi bar Yehuda. If you're now arguing the point of view, Rabbi Yossi bar Yehuda, you can say Kigido Fislo Gale Adate the Tosefes Nichole, right? That if he cut it and pruned it, in order obviously to improve it, right? Then what he had in mind, Adate in his mind, was the Tosefes Nichole, right? Then this is exactly what he's looking for, the improvement in it, right? But he's not interested in the original tree itself. So that therefore what? As long as the improvement stays on the tree itself, it's awesome. Okay. The improvement that he made as a result of cutting and the pruning, right? Okay, so in that particular case, and he never bothered to remove it, he never cut it down or anything like that, and then in that case, what have to we say? We have to say that, you know, the tree is prohibited, it's prohibited, okay, the whole thing, including the tree itself, because he's made upon the tree, and obviously, this is what his intention was, okay, that he would glorify his Aveda Zorah by not trimming it, yes.
Just to get the picture of what you're talking about, here's a tree.
Right.
And it had a little branch sticking out here.
Yeah.
And to make it look prettier as an Aveda Zorah, the guy trimmed off a piece of that.
Correct,
branch.
Correct.
And now it's a nice shape.
Right.
And then he's gone away.
Yeah.
So what we have here is a branch that was just trimmed off.
Right.
But and now it's starting to grow a little bit out of that branch.
Correct.
So what do you have to do? Cut off.
Cut off that, right.
The little piece that's growing,
right,
or the
right.
Whole branch.
No. Well, you cut off as much as you see that it would affect the growth, right. The improvement. That's what we call the improvement.
So it would be, here's this little branch.
Right.
So you cut it off here and now it grew this much.
Right.
But when you come in, you're going to cut it off up here.
Yeah.
Cut the whole branch off.
Yeah.
Because it had something done to it.
Right.
So it may leave the tree lopsided now to be without a branch.
No,
but
if it's not
usable, you can still get the fruit.
Correct. Correct.
Am I understanding?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
Still?
not if he lops it off. Not if he lops it off. Right. Right.
Right.
Right. He was interested in improving the appearance of it or something. Or to improve the fruits that would grow over there. Okay. Yes.
I'm sorry. What exactly were the pagans doing with this tree to make it an object of worship? I mean,
they bowed down to it.
No, but I mean, with the outgrowth that we're talking about, what were they doing? What kind of tree was it? What kind of...
Well, it doesn't specify what kind of a tree, whether it was a palm tree or something like that, you know. Could have been a palm, because they, you know, they grow with great frequency and they produce fruit. That's the point. It's not just for appearance, but also, you know, the fruit that's that they produce.
Right. Well, sometimes yeah. Pruning
improves. Right. Exactly. That's it. So that's the thing that has to be destroyed. The new growth. With whatever is there, right?
New growth.
Right.
So they're bowing down to the new growth. That's it, basically.
Yeah, yeah. Don't ask me why. Look, we're talking about a world that's 2,000 years removed from us.
Right.
So it's hard for us to understand the mindset. Yet, I mean, we know enough about classical Greek and the Roman mythology. You know, to know that the universe with all kinds of deities, semi-deities, hemi-deities, whatever you want to call them, okay? And, you know, so, I mean, springs of water, remember we had a reference to that before.
Actually, Phil, I was reading Plutarch's History of the Jewish People.
Yeah.
And that was the custom of the time before even Abraham was there.
Right,
They used to plant trees and they thought it would help their agriculture and so on.
Right.
They bowed out to anything and everything.
Correct. The revolution that Judaism brought about was the fact that we said that the Rebbeinu Shelalem
is the only God.
He's the force behind everything that you see in nature itself. The sun, the moon, the stars, the trees, etc., etc. It's the Rebbeinu Shelalem. It's not a whole group of individual deities. Right. Right.
Before that's what they used, the custom was in that area.
That's correct. Yeah. Correct.
They graduated from that to actual idols afterwards.
Yeah.
Right. Very interesting.
Yeah.
But isn't all of this that we're doing, the fact that they keep having additional
Mishnayos? Yes.
On more or less the same subject, and they're going over the same principles.
Yeah.
Isn't it really to reinforce the main principle, which is avodah zarah?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Right. Right.
All these different examples.
Right. Right. Absolutely. The Jew should not be enticed into Avodah Zarah.
No matter what.
Right.
This is showing all the various places where it might happen.
Correct.
In those days, it was very easy to entice the Jews.
Right, sure.
Absolutely.
Particularly when they were...
Look, we saw it in the days, even the Tanakh, you know, the much earlier period than the one that we're talking about right now, how Jews became enmeshed in the Canaanite practices.
Sure.
Right. The Baal, the Ashtarte, and so on and so forth, right? Ashtoreth, right?
Oh, it was very strange.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, it's easy enough that they're living among them. They were living among these people.
Yeah.
They were the minority to begin with, and they were upset.
They
it's only that.
500,000 people in the city at one time. It's not unusual in those days.
Alexandria was a metropolis. Alexandria, Rome, these were metropolises, right? Yeah. But you have other large cities. I mean, the city of Antioch. I mean, today, what does Antioch mean to us? It means nothing. But at one time, it was a very important city in Asia Minor.
What's that?
Antioch,
sure.
Antiochus. Yeah, well, it's named after the king Greek. Over there, right? Antiochus, right? Yeah.
Greek.
Yeah.
Greek. All right. New Mishnah.
let's finish first this one. You do awesome stuff.
There's really no halachic decisions here, are there?
Well,
I mean, they talk about these things in sort of abstract fashion.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the halacha is quoted by the Rambam, you know. It's what we find in the Mishnah over there. The first clause over there, Elon Shemitoy Mitchilo, and so on. And then the second clause, which says, you know, that if you cut it for a Vedazor, but then, you know, and if you remove the improvement as a result of it, right? And then the third one is, if you put an idol, simply put it down over there underneath, right? So when you took it away, right? So that is the halacha over there that's quoted by Maimonides. As you can see, if you take a look in the margin where it says, Ein Mishpat Ne Mitzvah, this is where the, you know, we find a reference to the code of the Rambam, and if there should also be some of the other codes that mention it, then they mention that. For example, if we take a look at the very first one, Adol Beis Gimel Dalet over there, so he says Maimon. That's what that abbreviation means,
top.
Right, the very top.
Yeah.
So that means the the Yod Chazak of the Rambam, right? And it's Peiches, Mehilchos Avedis Kerchovim. So you'd have to take a look to where he has the section on idolatry. And you look at Perek Ches, Halacha Gimel, and Dalet, right? And then he quotes two other authorities. One is the Samag.
Who?
Samag. The Samag is the Sefer Mitzvah's Godel. Okay, one of the early codes of Jewish law.
Before Maimonides.
Yeah. Or maybe contemporary with Maimonides. But Maimonides, you know, he wrote the Yad Chazaka, you know, in Spain and in Egypt and so on, whereas the Samag, this was composed in Europe. Okay? So the same this is going, so the listing is different. It's with Lavin. In other words, the Torah has Lavin and Esed, right? Things that are thou shalt not do and things that you should do. Okay? Right. So, right. Yeah. So under Lavin you find it Memhe. And then the next authority that he quotes is Tur Shulchan Aruch. In other words, the Tur of Rabbi Yankel Bar Haturim, who was the first to arrange what we call the Shulchan Aruch. The one that we had subsequently is the one by Rabbi Yosef Karo. But it was preceded by the Tur, Shulchan Aruch. Yud Dala means Yorad Deya. Okay. Simen Kuf Mem Hei, right? So if you check, you could probably find it also in the Shulchan Aruch itself. But I'm not talking about a Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. You understand?
No,
I'm talking about the big Shulchan Aruch. Okay, so you'll find it over there. So we have halachas that are derived on this particular page. Okay, all right. Let's finish this one right now. Right. This is what he wants. But the Iker Ilan, he was not interested in that. Or Iboy Sebo, you could say that's an agreement with the opinion of the Rabbanim, that Gido.